You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Good morning, Launch Streeters. Tamara here, your guide and proud to say, one-time employee at the mini golf hotspot for all kids in North Lake Tahoe, Magic Carpet Golf. Oh, yeah. Best summer job ever. All right, let's get real for a moment. Have you ever had an idea that you thought was brilliant? Maybe it would make a massive impact on your bottom line, or maybe it would solve your company's biggest challenges. So many of us have had those ideas, haven't we? So what did you do with it? Did you shove it deep down into the recesses of your mind because you didn't have the time or energy to pursue it? Maybe the resources? Did you rush to present it to those key stakeholders and they shot it down before it could even breathe life? So many of our ideas die early, before they've even hit daylight. So that got me thinking, why? Why do so many ideas hit the graveyard so early? And with that question in mind, I asked Mark Aramley, the inventor of BedJet, to come onto the show. He has taken this simple idea of keeping your bed at just that right temperature and turned it into this massive business. I was taking copious notes when he was talking about why you should never go to your bosses with an idea right away. He has a different path he thinks you should take. He also talks about why not all advice is actually good, even from the most successful people. Sometimes you got to put it through your own filters. He learned this from his Shark Tank experience. They all hated his idea and him, by the way. So he's got a lot to share. So I think you're going to really appreciate learning from his journey. So his innovator archetype is risk taker inquisitive. And you better believe that he has leveraged the fact that he innovates in those uncomfortable spaces when he leaps off the ledge to greater heights. That's the risk taker side. And his ability to find the innovation in the questions, to challenge everything. Well, why do we do that? How come we do that? Why is that an assumption that we hold? That's the inquisitive side. If you have those archetypes, listen to how he's used his two power triggers to drive innovation that makes an impact. All right, it's go time. Mark, I'm so excited for today. Thanks for joining us on Inside Launch Street.
Glad to be here, Tamara. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, since we don't know each other yet, what's one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Wow. I am the world's biggest super nerd. So, classic in every way. I watch sci-fi movies. I love superhero movies. I still read every science magazine I can get my hands on. So, you know, it's in my DNA.
Do you have a favorite sci-fi show that we should be watching?
I love Doctor Who. Mm. So you can stream it. I think they have it on Amazon Prime. And it's a show I have watched since I was a teenager. It's been around that long.
Well, you and I are going to get along quite well because that is a big show in our house. I have two boys. And we each have a different favorite Doctor Who. And for Halloween, we sometimes each dress up as our favorite. So,
Great.
We can have a whole podcast about that. But instead of that, let's go on to BedJet. Tell us a little bit about the journey, kind of where it started and what's happened since.
Right. So for anyone who doesn't know what a BedJet is, it's the world's first super fast cooling, heating, and climate comfort system just for your bed, right? So anyone who's ever woken up too cold, too hot, sweaty, fought over the thermostat with their partner, the machine gives you exactly the temperature you want. It helps you sleep better, gives you super comfort in bed. So, you know, BedJet didn't start out as a grand business plan like so many startup companies. Being a super nerd and an ex-engineer and a guy who loves to build things, the very first BedJet started out as a prototype hobby project, and I designed and built it on my kitchen table. And it was something I didn't even know if it would work. You know, I've personally suffered from sleeping hot. You know, it's been an issue in my life for many years. I just wake up sweating. You know, I turn the AC down to, you know, 65, 63. It's winter. I have the windows open. So the machine in big part was just, an experiment to see if I could make this thing work. And when I built it, it worked far better than I ever thought it would. And I had a few people try it out. And everyone said, Mark, this thing is really amazing. So having done new product development and introduced many new products before, I realized, starting a company just based on a prototype isn't something you do. You need some market validation. So we did a Kickstarter on it to test the market and see, is climate control for your bed something people even want? Is this something people are going to pay for? And those market tests came back very positively. And so I jumped in and decided to commercialize it and turn it into a real business. And 3 years later, we are the number one in our category. We're running circles around a couple of billion-dollar mattress companies that have taken stabs at this. We've got the best product, the best features, lowest price, highest customer reviews, and we're a growing company now that's profitable and creating jobs and succeeding out in the marketplace.
So I have to ask, because I'm always intrigued by companies that take on big dogs, whether accidentally or intentionally, and can compete with them. Why do you think you've been able to do it? I mean, is it just as simple as a superior product, or what else is going on that you've done or experienced that you think allows you to kind of, make a statement like that?
Right. So, you can't go head to head against a billion-dollar company as a startup with a Me Too offering. You just can't. And, this advice goes back to, the ancient art of war, right? This novel written.
Rereading that this week, actually.
Right. Yeah. Sun Tzu, I don't know, he wrote it 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, whatever. They still pick tidbits of knowledge out of that for officer training in the U.S. military. And one of his key tenets of fighting battles is you never go head to head against an enemy of superior numbers on an open battlefield. You just don't do it. And so for startup companies, you cannot come to the table with something that is the same as what somebody else has, or either from a feature or use or technology, and certainly price. So our magic formula has been really simple. We came to the table with something that was so much better than what they were able to do and what these guys were offering, but coupled with being almost half the price of what they were trying to charge for, their what I call relatively crappy solutions.
Right.
So that magic formula, better product, much lower price than the billion-dollar companies, we've been running circles around them with a marketing budget literally 1,000th. Maybe 0.1% the size of these guys. And we very quickly took the market. I believe we're the market leader right now.
And I would maybe even take it to the next level and say, just having followed kind of BedJet and the journey of it and the product, it's not even just better. It's really superior. And so you've really built a chasm between you and the competitions. So for the competition to try to do what you've done, even though they're billion-dollar companies, they'd have to really rework a lot of stuff to get to where you've gone. It's not a matter of just a tweak in what they do.
No, everybody who's tried climate control for a bed or temperature control in bed, every company out there has had a completely different solution, right?
Yeah.
One company has a mattress pad, one company has a water system, one company has just passive gel phase change in their bed. There's so many different approaches. And our approach was unique from anybody else's. And it turned out to be the right solution to the problem. And it's mirrored in the reviews. So, for example, our product, we'll compare to like Sleep Number, right? Has billion-dollar Sleep Number, who's got access to millions of dollars in engineering, comes out with this product that is a thick mattress pad. It's supposed to cool you and heat you. On their own website, it gets 2.6 stars out of 5.
It's just embarrassing.
It's a terrible product. I can't believe they even put their name on it. Now, you take BedJet, which has 90% 5-star reviews, and it sells at half the price with more features and more power and does all these great, you know, instant cooling instead of waiting 30 minutes. And in fact, BedJet hasn't just been a chasm ahead of the competition. It's actually the number one customer rated product in the entire mattress category on all of Amazon. So, you know, that sounds like a kind of a grandiose marketing statement. It's factual. I mean, out of 2,500 other products. So being able to come to the table with something that people really love.
Yeah.
And is a key factor, and price is the other half of it.
So, you know, I have to laugh because last night I was thinking about you and our interview coming up, which sounds so inappropriate now that I say it out loud, but I had turned on my heating blanket before I got into bed so that it would warm it up. And then I'm up in my mountain house, so it's, you know, cold at night. And I got in, I forgot to turn it off before I went to sleep. And then I woke up sweating, was like, what is happening? I'm so uncomfortable. And I was like, oh my God, thank God I'm talking to Mark tomorrow. We're talking about BedJet. But so I thought of you as I was going to bed, which again, as I say it out loud, doesn't sound the way.
That's a perfect example, Tamara. So let's look at that. Hey, why do I need a BedJet? You know, I'll just get, I don't need heat. I can just go get a $90 electric blanket. So the electric blanket, right, as an incumbent solution, takes 20, 30, 40 minutes to really warm a bed, right? And it's just heat. That's all it is. And it's electricity in the bed, and we don't even have to get into that, you know, the downsides of having electric wires, you know, right up against your body and the fire hazards. The BedJet will heat your bed to feel like a sauna, a warm sauna, like the sheets came out of the dryer in 60 seconds, right? So instead of waiting that 30 minutes, 60 seconds plus, you have the air circulation, and this is a key. You got sweaty from that heat. After a while, with the BedJet, the air circulation is drying you at the same time it's warming you, so you can enjoy it much longer and not get that hot, clammy feeling. And it's almost like being in a hot, warm sauna. You know, you can get that deep, enveloping heat without getting uncomfortable.
Well, last night was a great example to me of why the BedJet has done so well. And I'm curious, having taken on the big dogs, having, you know, these top-rated Amazon reviews and just customer raving customer fans, I'd say, what lessons have you had when bringing innovative ideas to life? And, you know, how do you think about that, especially when, you know, you said you started at your kitchen table. When you start out, you have limited resources, limited budget, limited people. And frankly, I would argue that whether you're an entrepreneur in a company, that's probably the reality you're facing.
Right. So we'll talk about budget first. The amazing thing about our moment in time right now is that you don't need $1 million budgets to create new products and services. You just don't. And it's been that way on the software side of things for a long time, right? Four guys in a fax machine turning over the internet industry and, you know,
you always hear the stories.
You always hear those stories, but you don't hear those stories about people creating hardware, physical products, because historically it has been very expensive to create physical products and electronic devices and things, you know, with injection tooling and electronic design. That was an area that used to be reserved only for large companies and big budgets. And now a lot of the things that happened in the software industry 20 years ago, the tools that brought development costs down, they've now set into the world of hardware, where now you can develop a physical product at a lower cost than in the history of business, right? At a lower cost, lower development cost, lower initial manufacturing cost. It's still expensive, you know, depending on the product, but it's within the range. Certainly for me, I self-funded the business. I'm not a wealthy guy. I've done well. I wound up mortgaging my house. I spent my life savings. I actually mortgaged my mother's house.
Wow.
You know, so I was kind of all in, but that was enough to get BedJet into production. And with my first, you know, few thousand units in the warehouse. And Tamara, honestly, I thank God every day from that first month that we had product available, people started buying it and the company started paying its own bills. From the very first month.
Well, that goes to show you the power of the idea and the product itself.
Right.
So I was listening to another podcast, which is, I think, aside from knowing your product, another place I came across you, I think it was How to Be Awesome at Your Job, which is a great podcast. And you had said something that caught my attention. You said, there's no upside to biding your time with good ideas. Right. I thought that was really powerful. Right. So tell us more about why that is.
So we've all had ideas for new products, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, since I've gotten some notoriety now as a guy who's taken an idea into a successful business, we had the Shark Tank, you know, which
yeah, we'll talk about that.
Oh yeah, tons to talk about there. But I have people coming to me all the time now with ideas. Hey, I got this great idea for this, and we've all been in that moment, right, where we have this idea for a product or service, we don't do anything with it, we sit on it, and all of a sudden, 2 years, 5 years, yeah, 10 years later, you see it on a shelf, you see it on TV, and some guy's a millionaire. Right.
Over yep. It. And it's not you.
And it's not you. So, you know, with BetJet, this was actually something I sat on since 2001. Right. It's when I first had the idea for it. And I didn't do anything till 2014. But and I'm lucky nobody did it during that period, went out and did what I did. But time and time again, the value of an idea is meaningless unless you execute on it. There is no upside to waiting. There's only downside when you sit on something, because there's a lot of smart people out there and everyone's coming up with good ideas. And if yours truly is a good one, chances are somebody's going to come up with it somewhere else and do something with it. Now, here's a great case study, yeah, right? We're filing our patents on BedJet, and I've been awarded maybe half a dozen patents right now on our approach. When we went into it, I'm thinking, hey, I'm the first guy to come up with this stuff.
Right.
Right?
We always think that, don't we?
We always think that. We start going into the patents and we see there's BedJet concepts going back to 1942 with filed patents. Now, nobody ever commercialized a BedJet, right? Nobody ever commercialized my incarnation of what the invention was. So the key there is the value is really not in the idea.
Yeah.
Some dude in 1942 had the same idea as me, right? The value is a warehouse full of product that you can actually sell. And the chasm between that idea and that warehouse full of product is actually so large. And that's the value. That's where entrepreneurs bring the value. Ideas are actually worth very little to me. And I tell this to people, ideas are worth nothing without a warehouse full of product to follow up with them.
So two layers to this. So I'll have to remember to come back to my second question. But the first one is, why is that chasm so hard for people to get over? Because I, you know, in my business and innovation, I hear a lot of, I had an idea once, which is kind of the regret version of the story you just told, right? Of not going after the idea. But it seems like that taking that leap from I have an idea to I'm going to really test the viability of this idea and get a warehouse full of product or whatever it is why is that so big for people?
It's bigger than you can even imagine, Tamara. When you imagine, okay, how much money is it going to cost me? How much time is this going to take? Whatever you estimate, multiply it by two or three. Okay.
That is the truth.
It always costs more to bring that idea into reality. It always takes longer, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 5x. I think a lot of folks, you know, ordinary folks, I happen to be lucky. I have an engineering degree. I've done product development basically since I left school. And I have worked in a number of startup companies and brought new products to market. So I know, I already had in me knowledge of the process, right? How to do it. Regular people don't. And don't have the background of an engineer to even understand where to start. So I think with most folks, it's just an inability to get started because they just don't know, hey, I have this awesome idea for a kitchen widget or a new baby care widget or something like that. They just don't know the first steps in terms of, well, who should I talk to? You know, should I hire a consulting engineer? Should I go hire a factory? There's so many different ways to run the process of commercialization. And I think first it starts with knowledge gap. And then the second starts with money gaps. In my case, I had another existing business, which I continued to operate, which was my bread and butter, and letting me pay my bills and live. I did not shut that down. I slowly whittled it away, but I did not shut it down until BedJet was out and profitable. And if I did it any other way, if I, let's say, okay, I'm going to quit my day job and focus 100% on this, I would have gone bankrupt. And so probably the biggest piece of advice I give people who are jumping into these new ideas, some entrepreneur types say, well, you got to be 100% invested, go all in, force yourself, you know, to either live or die with this idea. I think that's a total mistake.
Yeah.
I think you hang on to your day job as long as you possibly can while you are creating this business or product to fund you, fund that business. And that's where a lot of things fail, right? People just run out of money.
And they run out, I think they run out of money, they run out of time. And so I'm glad to hear you say that, because I actually think that the whole, you know, shut that door so a window can open is crap. I just really
Absolutely.
Do. I think you still got to pay bills, right? So I not that I want people to have the security of the job while they're doing it, but I want them to your point, it's almost like a scale that tips. And you find at one point, like you did, you get to the point where the entrepreneurial idea exceeds the day job and you can leap. And it's
exactly.
not, that it doesn't take out all the risk and all the fear and all the tight resources, but you're not putting yourself in false urgency that you would have otherwise, I guess.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. As I feel very strongly about that. So I'm glad to hear you say that, because it always makes me nervous when people say to me, I've quit my job, I'm all in. I'm like, okay, good. But do you have a year savings? Do you, like, how are you paying your bills? Let's talk a little bit about, though, you know, we all have a lot of aha moments, brilliant ideas. Are they all worth pursuing? Should we go after all of them?
No. And in fact, most ideas are bad ideas. And
well, that hurts. Tell us more.
Listen, no amount of passion behind an idea is going to make it a good idea. And I'll tell you, you know, I was on Shark Tank and I had these five millionaire, billionaire people tell me, your idea is stupid. You're stupid. You're going to fail. Nobody's ever going to want a BedJet, right? They hated me. They hated my product.
I mean, I think that's a nice way to say it. They were fierce that day.
They were as bad as they get. Yeah. You know, on my segment, they were as bad as they've ever been. So, you know, going back to good ideas and bad ideas. So we all have our personal opinion of our idea, right? And most people who think they have a good idea, they're very passionate about it. And some people will shop around to get advice from successful entrepreneurs or, say, successful Shark Tank millionaire, billionaire types, to get advice from people like that, to say, hey, is this a good idea? Neither one of those opinions matter. The only opinion that matters on an idea for product or service is the paying customers who open That's their right. wallets up to buy it. And, you know, I thought my BedJet idea was great. These guys at Shark Tank thought it was terrible. My opinion didn't matter. Theirs didn't matter. The only opinion that mattered were the people who bought them, decided to keep them, and give rave reviews about them.
Yeah.
And so it all goes back to market validation. You got to validate with customers. Forget how you feel about it. Go straight to the customers and validate there.
You know the extreme sports event Tough Mudder?
Yes.
That are all over the globe now? Yeah. So the backstory to that, just like you were saying, is Will Dean, who's one of the founders, submitted that idea for Tough Mudder to a Harvard Business School competition. He was at Harvard. And he lost. In fact, the professors told him it would never work. And right. it was a bad idea. And here we are, billions of dollars, global domination later. It's
right.
it created the extreme sports category kind of as we know it today. So to
right.
your point, not all successful people have the right answer. And I think there's another layer, Mark, that I'd love for you to talk about in what you're saying, which is, you know, the real test of an idea is, are people willing to open up their wallets and pay for it? It's not what's on paper.
Exactly. And no amount of passion for your idea will make it successful. Okay. You need people to get it, understand it, want it, and pay for it. Now, going to successful, you know, millionaires or billionaires or other, you know, highly successful business people, what most starting entrepreneurs don't realize about other successful business people, right? Those people only have to be right 50 or 60% of the time to be
right.
a success. Success in business is not about being right on every single move and every single strategy. It's that you're right more often than you're wrong, and you recover from the bad calls. And so when you look at the folks on Shark Tank, right, they're all very successful, but they got there by being wrong plenty of the time.
Yeah.
They only need to be right more often than they're wrong. And so taking advice from folks like that as gospel, just because they've achieved some success, is a wrong thing to do, because they can make mistakes just like anyone else and make a bad call.
And I think I've heard them say in other words the same thing of, I've been wrong, and that's okay. Yeah. And when they're right, they're really right. And it, you know, right, the makes the risk of the wrong not as big for them.
Exactly.
But I love what you're saying. I also think, too, there's a layer to that where they were right. What got them to where they are is they were right about, but the future looks different than the past. So, you know, I think we get a little bit of history bias of, this is what worked in the past for me, so that's what I'm going to push forward. So talk to us a little bit about Shark Tank, because you've alluded to it. I watched the episode and just about fell over in my chair. So my question to you about it, though, is not just how horrific maybe the experience was. I don't know. You seem to have come out of it okay. But what lesson did you take away from it?
So if anyone goes and watch.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes, too, because it's fun to watch.
It's fun to watch. They beat me up. They beat up the idea. You know, according to Mr. Wonderful, I'm going to burn in hell. And, you know, it shook me for about 10 minutes, right? When I prepared for the show, and you go through months of preparations with the producers, interviews, video interviews, you hone your pitch, you prepare for every possible question. And Tamara, the one event I did not prepare for was that they would instantly hate my product. It was the only thing I didn't practice, because all along the way, we brought the thing to trade shows, we did Kickstarters, everybody said, without even touching it, it's a great idea, it's a great product, and we had titans of industry. I mean, we went to a trade show, Bed Bath & Beyond, and
Tempur-Pedic, right, if anybody knows,
and
they
Mattress
know.
Firm, like, all these people are coming to us, you know, they're senior executives, saying, this is great, we've been following you, Mark.
Right.
And, you know, so it was the last thing in the world I prepared for, was for them to say, this is garbage, get out of here.
Right. I mean, it was pretty out of the gate.
I had about a minute and a half before it went south. But, you know, the takeaway there, number one, it was hugely positive for the company.
Yeah.
The thing with Shark Tank, if you have an idea people resonate with and you can manage to come off the show without being a jerk, which I hope I did. The publicity and the exposure you get is priceless. And we were blessed, incredibly lucky, that our episode aired, Tamara, literally the first week we started shipping bed jets.
Wow. That's, I mean, no coincidence, but what a confluence of events.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm wondering where the thick skin comes into all this, because let me just roll a few things into this. So I have this thing I'm working on, an idea, and after kind of sharing it with a couple of people, their first comment to me was, well, you've got to ask yourself why nobody's ever done this. You might be trying to do something that is not going to work. Like, there's a reason nobody's done it before. And I thought that was really fascinating. And then I hear you say, like on Shark Tank, look, they hated me. They hated the product. They hated everything. 10 minutes, I was okay. How much of being an entrepreneur and being an innovator of any kind, whether it's in a company, I think, or for yourself, is about really knowing how to have that thick skin, but also how to filter what you're hearing around you?
Right. So if you don't have a thick skin, don't even bother trying to be an entrepreneur. things are not going to go your way. There's going to be moments where people tell you this isn't going to work. And there'll be moments where it isn't working. Right. Where all the data you're getting is just, oh, no, you know, that things aren't really going the way we want. You need to have an internal well of persistence and resilience. And honestly, that is the number one factor I have found in success with entrepreneurs. It's not even intelligence. Honestly, there's so many smart, brilliant, intelligent startup company entrepreneurs that fail over and over and over again at what they do. It's not about being the smartest guy in the room or the best networked person in the room. It's just resilience and persistence and being able to stick with something through the ups and downs, knowing there's going to be downs. People with regular jobs, you rarely go through the huge swings of an entrepreneur, the high highs and the low lows. You know, the worst you get is fired and you move on to your next job with – with entrepreneurs, you know, startup companies, they're not a job, they're a lifestyle. Like they consume so much of your life that you identify your business with you. And so the lows affect you on a much more personal level than a person who just has a bad day at work.
You know, I think my dad gave me he's been an entrepreneur his whole life. And one of the best pieces of advice he ever gave me when I was in my 20s was just remember when you're up that you were once down. And when you're down, remember that you were once up. Try to even out a little bit of the swings that you go through. And I always thought that was really powerful advice because I think on either sides of the spectrum, it's very easy to forget that you were once on the other side.
That's great advice.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It stuck with me. I wanted to ask you about success in the future with BetJet and what you're looking to, because I often find with great companies that when they hit the top of the curve, instead of waiting to hit the cliff and rest on their success, they say, what are we going to do next to continue on the path that we're on? How do you think about the future for BetJet?
Right. So I give this advice to any startup company. It's very dangerous to be a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
So whether you have one product or one service, you need to diversify. So in our case, the company, we're now ending our third year of shipping product. We broke even our first year. Our second year, I was actually able to pay myself. And now we're in our third year, and the company's growing. We're hiring people. We have a little bit of money to spend on R&D. And just as soon as that money was available, we started looking at our next round of products. And so BetJet is going to be, we consider ourselves a sleep tech company, not just, hey, we do bed climate control. That's not our identity. Our identity
is... That's your product.
That's our product. Our identity is the application of technology towards comfort and sleep in the bedroom and improving the sleep experience. And so we have a number of new products that we're working on. And the keys to those products are the same as BetJet, right? It's going to be something that nobody's ever done before, completely new mousetrap. We're not creating a Me Too product, something that is better in every way, technology, performance, et cetera, at half the price of what the $1 billion guys charge for their version. So it's super, super secret. I can't share with you what the next product is going to be, but we are going to have a whole new product line coming out middle of next year. We're very excited about it. We actually think it's going to double the size of our company overnight. We're still growing with BetJet, by the way. 3 years in, we're still triple-digit growth every year, and we haven't hit anywhere near a ceiling on that product line. But you're going to see more bedroom tech products and things that are just as innovative and different as our original BetJet product.
Well, if I'm a launch shooter out there listening, I would take a second and think about two things. A, how do I get a BetJet so that I can have a better night's sleep? Because sleep is the key to performance, which is a whole nother level of this that we're not going to get into on this podcast. But we all know how important sleep is these days. But the second thing is, Mark, what you said around your formula and really understanding that it is about doing it differently than the big guys or the competition out there. So instead of chasing the competition, right, you're chasing your own ocean. I think that's very cool. Before we go on to the final questions, where can people go to find out more about BetJet, connect?
Sure. So BetJet.com, where you could still get a BetJet in time for Christmas. and if anyone ever wants to reach me personally, you can write us at info@BetJet.com.
What is the three pizza rule?
The three pizza rule, right. You should never have more people involved in a project then you can feed with three pizzas. I actually have a one pizza rule, okay? Oh. As I've worked in many different large companies and small companies on new product development, when you look at a product development team, to me, I'm like one large pizza. The minute you get more than four, five, or six people collaborating on a new product, I think you start to hit a point of diminishing returns by adding more people.
I love the idea of applying it to pizza. I couldn't agree with you more. I think that we confuse collaboration and consensus. And I always think about it as, you know, real collaboration is the right people talking about the right things at the right time. That's not everybody. It's usually only a few people, but I love the idea of applying it to pizza. It's fantastic.
Right.
What is one kind of final piece of advice you have for Launch Street innovators out there in terms of taking that first step in launching or testing their ideas?
Right. Number one, get the customer validation. Okay. Before you go all in, whether you're working in a big company and pitching to your boss or it's your business, get that customer validation first. And there's so many easy and cheap ways to do it, right? You can do a Kickstarter. If it's a product, you can do a Kickstarter. There's all sorts of customer survey focus group services out there, you know, SurveyMonkey's another, where you can pay a few dollars, put together a questionnaire, and, you know, ask 10,000 people at a reasonable price, hey, would you be interested in this? Would you like this feature? Would that work for you? What would you pay for this? Getting that before going all in, getting that before spending your money is huge. So I tell everyone, start there. Forget what you think about your idea. Forget what your boss thinks about your idea, your neighbor or your husband or your brother or some successful business person. Go to the customers, get their opinions first.
Do you think on that you can go to friends and family, or are they simply too loaded? Do you really need to just get some random strangers who would be your target audience?
I think that friends and family are a little biased. And, you know, I think it's always good to talk to anyone who's willing to listen to you to bounce ideas off of. But when it comes to making huge decisions based off life savings and changing your career tracks, you got to get the unbiased opinions of the customers. You can't just stick with people close to you.
You know, one of the things I discovered in trying to test out my ideas is that you can rent a mall kiosk for like $800, which you want to talk about figuring out if people even care about your idea. Man, go stand at a mall.
Right. Right.
Mark, this has been fantastic. Thank you. I so appreciate it. I think we've gotten a lot of great tips, not just for entrepreneurs, but I think also for our entrepreneurs out there about how to think differently about what really it takes to move a good idea forward. So thank you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Before you go, so fascinating, right? I got a question for you. What are you going to do to experiment and validate your ideas? What's one step, even if it's just with duct tape and centered markers, that you can do to bring your ideas to life and get some real world feedback? As Mark talks about, that's where you know if your idea has legs, and it's how you prove its worth to those stakeholders that matter. So now you're asking, well, how do I do that, Tamara? No worries. I got you covered. You know the drill. On our website, go to launchstreet.com is Launch Street On Demand, online innovation tools at your fingertips. Sign up. We only accept people, I think, the 1st to the 5th of every month. So you may have to go on a waiting list depending on when this podcast airs, or you may be able to sign up. I'm not sure where it goes in the order. But we do that because we want to make sure that we get our new amazing Launch Streeters in, and then we focus on the people that are actually in there innovating for as much time as possible. But in there are a range of Burst of Innovation video lessons and exercises. There is a whole video on rapid experimentation days and how to create that for yourself and others, how to bring those ideas to life, get feedback, optimize, then present. Now, go bring those ideas to life. Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.